In Conversation with Terry Shepard, award-winning broadcaster, narrator, and author. A deep dive into the writer's craft with the artists and support systems who create the stories we love.
Thanks, Linda, and welcome to this special edition of In Conversation, part one of our visits with authors from Capital Crimes, the Sacramento, California chapter of Sisters in Crime. We'll visit with seven storytellers in this series, learn about their latest book projects, and discuss what inspires some fascinating people to become extraordinary authors. Our first guest is Laura Jensen Walker, the award-winning author of more than 20 books, including the number one Amazon bestseller, Agatha-nominated Murder Most Sweet. Her historical mystery debut, Death of a Flying Nightingale, releasing in September 24, shines a spotlight on an overlooked group of World War II heroes, the Flying Nightingales. These brave women risked their lives going into combat zones after D-Day to evacuate the wounded and care for them on flights home. Formerly stationed at an RAF base in Oxfordshire while in the Air Force, it was Laura's great privilege to interview the last remaining Nightingale at age 107. Laura Jensen Walker, welcome to In Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about the Flying Nightingales.
Okay, I'm going to tell you how I got the idea. My husband and I'm an Anglophile, having lived in England. I drink tea, I don't drink coffee. Everything England I love. And we were watching an episode of Penelope Keith's Hidden Villages, which was spotlighting little villages around England. And she interviewed a woman who said, "I think I'm the last living flying nightingale." And I said, "What's a flying nightingale?" And she said, "I was 17 years old and I volunteered and I signed up. I got 6 weeks of training and then we went over after 6 days after D-Day and we brought the wounded men home and it was like the worst injuries you've ever seen." And they only had 6 weeks of training. They weren't official nurses. They were nursing orderlies and they cared for these men. And I went, "I've never heard of this. How come I don't know about these women?" So then I started doing the research. I found they had a Facebook page and I wanted to interview that woman. She had sadly passed already. And I thought, oh no. But then I found another woman who was still alive and living in Australia, Edith Titch Lord was her name. And I got to interview her through her daughter multiple times and ask her all these questions and to find out what it was like to live at that time on a base and to go over multiple times a day and bring these wounded men back. And it was, they never lost a man. Two flying nightingales did die. One was shot down by Germans. The plane was shot down. And another one, their plane crashed because they weren't allowed to wear Red Cross markings on the plane because they brought munitions and supplies over. So they were the first women to go into combat zones.
And you yourself had an Air Force career?
Yes. I joined right after high school because I lived in Arizona and I hated it. And I wanted to see the world. So I joined the Air Force when I was 19 and I spent the next 5 years flying a typewriter around Europe in a beautiful base in Oxfordshire, which was right by the Cotswolds. So that's where these women were based. And so I'm very familiar with that. So I just was so drawn to the story. And I thought, people need to know about these amazing women because we've never heard of them.
And you're with Level Best Books, great publisher. What was it, do you think, about your story that attracted their attention?
Well, I know Verena especially loves historical fiction. And so I actually had been trying to get a new agent. I lost my old agent. And several agents in a row told me, "You know what? I'm sorry, but publishers aren't buying World War II fiction right now." And it's like, what? So I thought, are you kidding me? And so then another friend of mine, Tina De Bellegarde, who's an author with Level Best, she said, "Laura, you should submit it. You don't have to have an agent. You can go right to Level Best." And so, but I thought, but it's a mystery publisher. At that time, it wasn't really a mystery. So I thought, all right, I had a slight mystery. So I amped up the mystery, sent it in Verena. And she said, "This is exactly the kind of thing that we love." So that's the story. And I showed you the beautiful cover, isn't it? It just, I've written over 20 books, I would say hands down it's my favorite cover.
Describe it for those who can't see it.
Yeah, it's a stylized cover, and it shows one of a flying nightingale sort of in profile with the most gorgeous drop-dead cheekbones that I would love to have. But on the base, and you see a plane coming in, you see the ambulance, you see people in the background, so you can tell you're on a flight line. It's just so vivid, and it just is like you feel like you're there, and it's just stunning. I love it.
How were you able to recreate in historical fiction an authentic set of characters from that era when you didn't live it?
Right. Good question. Well, I have always adored World War II, so I watched tons of World War II movies, read tons of World... So I've... For years, I have immersed myself in that time frame, and especially England. So I felt like I really knew that well, I created three different, very different characters. I have Maeve, who's from Ireland, and Ireland was neutral. So she joined, but, all of her friends and family, we don't need to, we're neutral. But she wanted to because her fiancé had been killed. And then there was Etta, who was a streetwise girl from the slums of London. And then naive farm girl Betty. And I made her, I thought of her like the woman I had heard on that first interview saying I was only 17 years old. And I just thought, what would it be like for a naive 17-year-old farm girl? What would that, be like? So I made three very different women. And then it's also the bonds of their friendship as well as serving. And the wonderful thing, too, about the Nightingales, they never lost one man. They brought over 100,000 men back from Normandy and Amsterdam, Holland, and they never lost a man on their flights. So that's pretty incredible.
Laura Jensen Walk is our guest. We're talking about her forthcoming book, Death of a Flying Nightingale, which is coming out from Level Best Books in 2024. How in the world did you go have a conversation with this 107-year-old woman who was halfway around the world?
Right. Well, we did it through her daughter. It was a lot of emails. We never physically talked on the phone, but we did. I sent her a little gift at one point to thank her because I kept going, but what about this? And what were the bathrooms like? And, I had just so many basic ideas because even though I'd been on a base, I hadn't been on a base in England in the 1940s. So I needed to know that. And she was just so kind and so patient with me. I sent her a little gift. And so her daughter taped her and she... said, oh, here's mom wanted to say hi. And she goes, hello, Laura, with that lovely accent. Oh, thank you so much for your... And so I burst into tears when I saw her because I thought, oh, there she is. And afterwards, my husband said, you've got to get this. At that point, I didn't have a publisher. He said, you have to find a publisher for this book. These women need to be honored. And so thankfully I did. And I'm so grateful. I sent an early version before I'd made it a mystery. It was called The Nightingale Girls. And I sent an early version to Edith's daughter, Colleen, and she read it aloud to her mom so she could hear it. And I'm so glad because unfortunately, sadly, Edith passed away just a couple months after her 107th birthday in October. So she'll never get to hold a copy of the finished book in her hands, but she got to see the cover. And no, she didn't get to see the cover because that was before we got it. But she got to read an early version and she got to see her little snippets that she told me included in the book. So that made my day.
Is it harder to write historical fiction than it is to write mystery?
I think so, because there's so much research involved, Yeah. And I'm a former journalist, so my first couple of drafts, the journalist in me was fighting with the novelist in me. But I want to make sure it's completely accurate, and I've got to use all this research. And then it's like, yes, but you're a novelist first, and you've got to have a good story. It's all about the story. So it's a lot of times okay, that's got to go away. That's got to be thrown out. And I had to do a lot of cutting. It was probably one of the hardest books I've written because of that. But I loved it. And I just feel so privileged to be able to tell the story and introduce the world to these unheralded, forgotten heroes.
The book is Death of a Flying Nightingale. Our guest is Laura Jensen Walker. Her website is Laura, JensenWalker.com. Let's go through the two questions. Favorite song?
Oh, gosh, that is so hard. All right, so in pop, I would say John Denver's Matthew. I love John Denver. But I also, my husband is a musician, singer, and he introduced me to opera, and I love O Mio Bambino Cara by Renato Tibaldi. So completely different, John Denver, and then opera. So.
And if you were stuck on a desert island, what book would you take with you?
Well, again, because I love World War II so much, I'm a big fan of Rosamund Pilcher. And they're not the Shell Seekers, which everybody else goes for. She did this coming-of-age book called Coming Home about a young woman named Judith. And I read that at least once a year. So it's my comfort read.
And a World War II book, you noted Codename Verity, Elizabeth Wise.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
tell me about that one.
That actually, believe it or not, it was a YA novel. Does not read at all like a YA novel. I've read that three times and wept every time. It's two women, one's a spy, one's a pilot, they're best friends. And one of them gets caught by the Nazis and is imprisoned and tortured. But it's just a beautiful, beautiful book about friendship and resilience. And it's just gorgeous.
Last question.
Yes.
You are a journalist by trade. What drew you to fiction?
Oh, because ever since the first grade, I read 103 books in the first grade, more than anybody else. And my teacher took me around to everyone and had me reading. I said, someday I want to write books. And so fiction was just my first love. I always read fiction. When I started my career, because of the journalism background, I wrote 10 nonfiction books to start. But my heart and my passion has always been fiction.
Laura Jensen Walker has been our guest. Death of a Flying Nightingale comes out in September of 2024. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We are in conversation with authors from Capital Crimes, the Sacramento, California chapter of Sisters in Crime. Wherever you may be, you are welcome to become a part of the family. Learn how at capitalcrimes.org. Our guest is June Gillum. She writes the Hillary Broom crime novel series, inspired by her obsession with what makes ordinary people mad enough to kill. Book 5 in the series, Nest of White Crows, is just out on Audible, and it is a fantastic listen. A native of Central Valley, June lives cradled between California's coastal range and the Sierra Nevada mountains. She loves the company of writers and readers and was honored with a Jack London Award for her service to the writing community. Her current book, which is coming out in 2024, is Legacy of the Wild Vines, Hillary Broom, Book 6. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Without giving away spoilers, what can you tell us about Book 6?
Well, it's set in Italy, and Hillary is on a summer vacation with her husband and her teenage daughter, and they're going over there as a way to tour the university over there that the daughter wants to attend, and they are going to run into something they don't expect.
The question they always ask in situations like this is, where do these ideas come from?
That one actually is an idea that's been with me for decades. It's the idea of my rage against the patriarchy. So the villains here are a group of priests and Italian right-wingers that are determined to keep that patriarchy in place, goddammit.
And how did you build Hillary? She is a fascinating protagonist.
She is a reporter at my first book. My very first novel had a different main character. And Hillary was the reporter. The young red-headed reporter who was covering that story. And I realized, well, my critique group friends, you know, critique groups, how great they are. My critique group friends said to me, June, you have two novels here. You have to separate them. And Hillary was the reporter, and the Amy was the other one, the half-made you Indian. And so I separated them, and Hillary now, this sixth book is the end of the series. And then after that, I'm going to do a trilogy picking up Amy's life. And I'm going to Thriller Fest for the first time this June to learn how to do a classic thriller. Because these books right now are more mainstream with a crime in them. So I'm going to focus on learning to do a classic thriller with the next set.
June Gillum is our guest. Her website is JUNEGILLAM.com. She writes the fantastic Hillary Broom series, and her latest in 2024 is Legacy of the Wild Vines, Hillary Broom, Book 6. Why write?
Just have to. Started out as a poet. The poems just poured out. They would come along when you're driving. You have to pull over by the side of the street and park and get the poem down because it wants to come when it's ready. And if you don't get it down, it's gone. And then the poems wanted to become stories. So that's it. And I think every writer who's really continued writing has that in them. They just can't stop. You just can't stop. You know, I get up at 5 and I write.
What does it feel like when that magic moment comes, when the story seems to be flowing through you and not from you?
It's delightful, especially delightful when all of a sudden the characters will tell you who they're connected to and what they're connected to. And you're like surprised and delighted, like, what? Of course. That's it. Of course. It's so fun. But a lot of it isn't fun. A lot of it's just work. Keep your butt glued to the chair. So that's what you have to do. You have to be there and be ready for the fun time.
2 common questions. Favorite song?
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
Did you grow up with an interest in country music?
Yes, my dad loved it and my husband loved it. And we used to sing at the top of our lungs when we would drive from Sacramento to Glendale to visit my husband's parents. We would sing all these country songs at the top of our lungs.
And if you were on a desert island and could only take one book, what would it be?
You know, I think it's going to sound funny, but I would take the Bible.
Really?
Yes, I taught Bible as lit. Mm-hmm. And it has such a variety of genres. And I just think if I could only take one book, that would be full of a lot of books, you know, because it's just a compendium of books.
Do you have a favorite Bible quote?
Yes. Jesus in Matthew said, "Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof."
And what does that mean to you?
It means don't worry about shit today.
June Gillum's newest book is one that you're going to have to get when it comes your way. It is Legacy of the Wild Vines. And you're shifting gears to spend some time with your original main character. I have to ask this question because it happens a lot when a secondary character becomes the star. And that's obviously what happened in book one for you.
That is. That's what happened. Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad you're giving Amy some time. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I loved it on here.
You're listening to part one of our series of conversations with members of Capital Crimes, the Sacramento, California chapter of Sisters in Crime. Our next guest is Jessica Arden Klein, the author, educator, and tarot enthusiast with a passion for helping writers bring their stories to life. Her latest book is Tarot for Fiction Writers, a nonfiction book designed to help writers incorporate tarot prompts into their creative process. Tarot for Fiction Writers uses an approach that pairs writers' imaginations with high-impact storytelling prompts and tarot interpretation. This method harnesses the power of play, randomness, and novelty, along with the archetypes built into the tarot to help writers supercharge their writing practice. Jessica also writes paranormal cozy mysteries and romances as Jessica Arden. Her short fiction has been featured in Woman's World as well as several anthologies, and her website is jessicaarden.com/tarot. Jessica, welcome to In Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Why nonfiction after writing fiction for so long?
So I think I started working with tarot probably about a year and a half ago. And, you know, when Lisa Kessler came to speak at our Capital Crimes meeting and just mentioned the fact that she used tarot for writing prompts, I was just totally intrigued and really excited about that idea. And so I immediately signed up for her class the same day. But in the intervening 2 or 3 months, I was just obsessed with this idea, and so kind of went off on my own and came up with prompts and different ways to use the tarot cards to create all sorts of things for stories to spark different ideas. And it's just been such a wonderful practice. And then probably at some point after I'd taken Lisa's class and through about half a year after that, I realized I had so many notes and so many notebooks filled with my ideas. Just also not just the tarot and the prompting, but also the why this was so helpful for fiction writers. And I talked in the introduction about play and novelty and randomness. And I think those are kind of superpowers that can help you when you're stressed, when you're when you get that perfectionism and you got deadlines coming, and that actually leads you to be less creative and puts your brain in survival mode and shuts it down. So especially after the past few years with the pandemic lockdowns and things, you know, we're all in a place of stress, dealing with the fallout and the long-term consequences of that. And I think that using this and using play in particular is just really an important part of a writing practice, and being able to get back to that kind of joy and excitement that connects you, and why we started writing in the first place. You know, that it's really powerful. So I think finding ways to incorporate play, which is something I have studied for years also, into writing, is just really a powerful tool. And I really wanted to share that with everyone.
We've both taken Lisa Kessler's class.
Yes.
Few are better at writing fast and well than Lisa. She turns out a ton of books a year. How does tarot speed up the process of creation?
I don't know that it necessarily speeds it up, but it, if you have trouble staring at the blank page and you're not sure where to get started, or you get to a point where you run out of your current idea and you're not really sure where to take things next, it can throw something totally different into the mix and set your ideas going. It's not like a super speed kind of thing for me, although Lisa writes fast. I'm a very slow writer. It let me tap into kind of the subconscious ideas that were kind of simmering in the background, and the images on the cards would sometimes come up and help me make connections that I hadn't between other ideas I'd had in the past and this specific situation I was trying to figure out during the writing process.
And I remember when I used some of those techniques that you taught when you were speaking to Capital Crimes, it took me in a completely different direction than I was expecting. How do you manage that?
That can be exciting and wonderful, and also can derail things in some cases. So I think you have to really think about the core of the story that you're trying to tell, and make sure that thing takes your story further in that direction, in the place where you want to go. And maybe that's something you need to save for a different story later. Or you might think, actually, this is the thing you needed to take it back and fix it from a part that wasn't working.
You're a gifted writer in the mystery and romance genre. Was it harder to do this nonfiction thing than it was for you to write your other stuff?
It's weird. It was faster, definitely, because I'm a slow writer with the fiction, but I just have been thinking about this so deeply and so long. And also coming from the standpoint of teaching, I also taught writing at university level to international students mostly, and speakers of other languages. And so the teaching part also helped, I think. And so I had a base to draw from that experience as well, and trying to, you know, communicate and put things back into place. Now I'm having trouble revising and just clarifying and stopping when trying to make everything perfect.
Well, some of the best things about stories aren't their perfection, but their imperfection.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's something that tarot can really tap into also, because the way that tarot is set up, it's structured based on cycles, story cycles. So for the major arcana, the first set of cards in the deck, go through the Fool's Journey story cycle that will look very familiar to anyone who's familiar with the hero's journey, save the cat, you know, any other kind of story structure. So there's, you know, the different sorts of characters you meet, from the mentors and such, and all the triumphs and trying and failing and not quite getting there and having to start over. And there's also a lot in the tarot about messy emotions. And I'm also really interested in Jungian psychology, and there's a huge overlap between tarot and Carl Jung's idea of the collective unconscious that you can pull from. There's a lot of universal human experience, imperfections and all, and common things that are common to experience, which is what makes stories resonate with your readers, which is really what makes this a powerful tool to use when you're crafting your stories. You're bringing in all these things that, you know, over time, over generations and generations, that people have felt and struggled and dealt with. And having those show up in your stories can make your characters feel more real, have more depth, you know, have that nuance that makes them very specific. And so that, I think that's something else that you can bring out using the tarot.
We're having a fascinating conversation with Jessica Arden Klein, who writes as Jessica Arden in the romance and mystery space. Her latest book is Tarot for Fiction Writers, Using the Cards to Supercharge Story Ideas, Deepen Characters, and Illuminate Plot Lines. Her website is JessicaArden, ARDEN.com, and a slash after that with the word tarot, TAROT, to learn about her latest book. Let's do the two questions. Favorite song?
Ooh, these were so hard. These took me longer than anything else to come up with. It's always changing. I don't even remember what I said.
I think you said Stick Season.
So I said my most recent favorite is Stick Season by Noah Kahan. I loved his music. It's just, every song's like a little mini memoir. He's a really gifted storyteller.
And if you were stuck on a desert island, what's the one book you'd take with you?
Oh my gosh. Oh, that would be really hard. I would want a whole omnibus of the Arcana Chronicles by Cressley Cole, which is one of my favorite series that I've read over and over and over again, and finally finished this year.
When, and now is Tarot for Fiction Writers out now?
No. So in March, March 12th through the 29th, it will be launching on Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding platform. And so the people who back on Kickstarter will have a chance to have the Tarot for Fiction Writers before anyone else. And there's also, the reason I'm using Kickstarter is because it can provide an experience more than just a book that you would find on the retailers. So they've got, so I can offer classes, I can offer tarot consultations, workshops in person and online, printable materials, video content, and instructions. So it's just really a great platform for creators. They're a public benefit company, so they hold themselves to a higher standard. They do a lot of work donating and giving back to the community and to artists and creators, and it's just a really wonderful, wonderful place. So that's where you can find it first. And then after that, it'll be launching to my website and then to retailers probably mid-2024.
The book is Tarot for Fiction Writers. Our guest, Jessica Arden Klein. I can't wait. I am a huge Kickstarter fan. I'm going over there right now. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Terry. This is wonderful.
It's a special edition of In Conversation, visiting with authors from Capital Crimes, the Sacramento, California chapter of Sisters in Crime. Part two of this series debuts next week, and you can learn more about the club by visiting their website, capitalcrimes.org. Our final guest this week is Cindy Fozzie. She is the author of Multo, a contemporary thriller published by Agora Books in 2023. Her historical novel, My MacArthur, was published by Sandhill Review Press in 2018. Her articles have appeared in The Daily Beast, Electric Literature, Publishers Weekly, and Writer's Digest. Her website is Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, F-A-Z-Z-I.com. Cindy Fazzi, welcome to In Conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
I feel like a slacker sitting next to you. You've
no.
done so much. When did you make the jump from journalism to fiction?
There was no jump. I was always writing fiction. It took me forever to get published. I mean, obviously, I needed a day job to support my fiction writing. And so I've been writing fiction since 1995, but all along I had a day job from journalism. After I left AP, I joined a nonprofit organization in New York, and then I'm into marketing. To this day, I still am a marketing writer to support my fiction writing.
So without giving away spoilers, tell us about Multo.
Right. Multo means ghost in Tagalog. It is a contemporary thriller, and the book follows a Filipino-American bounty hunter named Domingo, who is looking for the only quarry that has ever eluded him, an undocumented biracial Filipino woman named Monica, who can disappear like a ghost. So the book is not a ghost story, but the term multo refers to undocumented immigrants who tend to be invisible. You know, as a matter of fact, they are in hiding most of the time. Anyway, so in the book, Monica is overstaying in the United States because she's looking for her American father, who doesn't know that she exists. So the father happens to be an Air Force general who doesn't want a political scandal. And so he hires Domingo the bounty hunter to nab Monica, take her to immigration authorities for deportation. Essentially, the book pits a dogged bounty hunter against a desperate woman in hiding. They are compatriots. They are both in the United States in pursuit of the American dream, but their dreams are on collision course.
What a fascinating plot. How in the world did you come up with that?
You would not believe how I got into it in a very long roundabout way. I wrote this book first in 1995 from the point of view of Monica, the undocumented immigrant, and the book was considered literary fiction. And it was universally rejected by all the literary agents who read it. They told me this book is uncommercial. This is unsellable. Ouch, right? So it took me many, many years before I completely rewrote the book, and this time from the point of view of the bounty hunter. And once I did that, it organically became a thriller because the bounty hunter is all about the hunt and the chase. So once it became a thriller, it became commercial. It got me a literary agent who sold the book in 2022 to Agora Books, and then it was published last year, last September.
27 years
yes.
later. What made yes. you stick with it?
So I really believed in the book. I mean, first of all, the subject of immigration is close to my heart because I am an immigrant. I was born and raised in the Philippines, and I immigrated here in 1989. But apart from that, I believe that the subject is important. It's relevant. It was relevant in 1995 when I wrote it. There was an immigration crisis. Today, I mean, look at the news. There is still an immigration crisis. So it's almost always in the news. But I understand now that it's a really difficult subject to write about. And so my first attempt was really ill-conceived of me writing it as a literary novel. So as it turned out, when I adapted
And it's the same story. It's exactly the same story, but from a different perspective. It turned out it was easier to digest and more entertaining. And so that's how it sold. It sold itself.
Fascinating. You're a marketing person. These days, there are very few publishers that can put any marketing muscle behind an author. How do you sell your books?
With this, in a way, again, it sells itself because of the subject matter. Most of the time, I get invited to talk about immigration issues and why I'm writing about immigration and how does it feel to be a recent immigrant? You know, what are our concerns? And that is the real motivation in the end, is that I wanted to write about immigration, not about my own immigration journey, but about the most common concerns, struggles, and aspirations of recent immigrants. And for brown or black immigrants, it boils down to one very basic thing, which is the need for respect and the basic need for acceptance, because they are told in so many ways, so many times, that they don't belong in America. And so I really thought that was a story that I needed to write.
Cindy Fazzi is our guest. Her website is cindyfazzi.com. We're talking about Molto, her fascinating book about an immigrant pursuing an immigrant. That just, for me, was a reason that I was drawn to that book, was because of the way that you described both the person who was being chased, the predator and the prey.
Yes.
Right. And both of whom are chasing, in essence, the same thing in a very different way.
And they're compatriots.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to give away spoilers because it's an amazing... amazing book. But tell us a little bit more about the bounty hunter who is chasing this undocumented immigrant.
So he is a naturalized citizen, so he has the legal status, but still he realizes he's the best in his business. He specializes in catching fugitive, undocumented immigrants. Actually, his character is based on a news article I read in the New York Times. There was this bounty hunter who only handled cases involving undocumented immigrants. And I thought that was fascinating. I didn't know that they specialized, you know, that they have this... Anyway, so his character is based on this real person, just a news article that I read. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of conflict in him too. Because the reason he's very good at his job is because the people he's catching are very much like him. They think like him. He knows exactly where they hide. He knows what their fears are. He could smell them from miles away. And it's not that he's not, he does empathize, but his goal basically is to get rid of fugitives whose crimes are more serious than just entering the country illegally. Most of the time he's catching people who are convicted, you know, drug dealers or murderers. So Monica is a very special case. It's this one case that he accepts for money because it was easy money, because she is basically harmless. It's just this rich white general who wants to get rid of the evidence of his sexual indiscretion. And Domingo goes, for once in his life, he's like, I'm going to do this easy job. And indeed, he finds her in less than 24 hours. She is so easy because she's not a real criminal. But then it is the one case that is going to change him. They each kind of change each other's perspectives. So on, like, at first glance, they seem real adversaries, but no spoilers, but that's how there are layers upon layers, you know, as far as their characters and their motivations are concerned.
Molto is a book. Cindy Fazzi is our guest. Let's ask the two common questions. Favorite song?
We Will Rock You. Queen.
What is it about that, besides the fact it's played in every sporting event in the world, that draws you to it?
It is my favorite workout song. See, I mean, it's great for, I'm on a treadmill and you're like, yeah, I mean, you can hear it, right? The beat, yeah, it's perfect.
And if you were on a desert island somewhere and could only take one book, what would it be?
It will be just any Lee Child, any Jack Reacher book.
Do you like the new guy better or Tom Cruise better in the role?
I like the book.
Great answer. Cindy Fazzi is our guest. The book is Molto, available everywhere. Thank you so much for
Thank
being
you,
on the program.
Terry.
Four fascinating authors from Capital Crimes, the Sacramento chapter of Sisters in Crime. Sisters in Crime is the national organization promoting different perspectives and new twists on stories with secrets and discoveries of guilt and innocence, justice and injustice. Sisters in Crime welcomes anyone as a sibling who loves crime fiction. All genders, all genres, all stages of writing, all ages writing for all ages, and readers. Learn more at sistersincrime.org.
In Conversation with Terry Shepherd is a copyrighted presentation, all rights reserved. I'm Lisa Davis. Join Terry Shepherd next time in Conversation.